Good morning, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and we are here to do it again to bring you amazing guests, amazing conversation, amazing topics. So before we get into the show, I'm going to ask you to do what I ask you to do every morning, and that is to go out and be an advocate for the Roundtable Talk Show. I know you have friends, you have a network, you got Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. Let someone know the Roundtable Talk Show is live because we have so much that you don't want to miss out on. And we already know that friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're going ahead and sharing the show and waking somebody up and letting them know, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest. And we're going to go ahead and start the conversation. And our first guest is Stephanie Harris, and she is the owner and CEO of Partner Centric. Good morning, Stephanie. How are you?
Good morning. Good. Glad to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. What made you decide to join the Roundtable Talk Show?
Well, my marketing gal has followed you for a little while, and she said Sharifa is super pro-business and super passionate about what she does. And I think that it's a great opportunity to meet other like-minded people and get away from the grind for an hour, talk about some other things.
I love that. I never asked that question. So I just came to my mind. Sometimes I want to know, but I usually ask returning guests, like, what keeps you coming back? What brings you back? So it's interesting. I thank you. Please thank her for me. Now, I was taking a look at your bio, and it seemed to me that you are someone who is very much about empowerment, empowering other people, empowering other women. Your company is the largest woman-owned marketing agency, correct?
In our industry.
In your industry, why did you decide to focus on women's empowerment?
Well, I'm in a type of marketing that's very tech focused. It's called performance marketing or affiliate marketing. And so many of the businesses that I'm in partnership with or who I compete against and so on are run by men, but it's an industry that the day-to-day work is very female focused. It's a lot of account managers and people doing that like day-to-day client work who are women, often, mid-30s to mid-40s with young families, which I can very much identify with. And I think it's important to shed a light on, you can also run and lead if that's something that you feel a calling to do, because I do think that like business ownership is in some sense a calling for all of us.
It is. I mean, that's one of the things I talk about with entrepreneurs, and I think makes them stand out. It is a calling. I've seen so many entrepreneurs who will tell me the same story, how they wanted to be an entrepreneur, they gave it up to go back to work, go back to corporate America, and then for some reason they came back. Just like myself, I was laid off 8 times. And so I would go back between corporate America, entrepreneurship, corporate America, entrepreneurship. But it's something that I couldn't give up. You have that same feeling as well.
Yeah, well, my path's a little different. I was the first employee of the original business back in 2006 and kind of did that account management role, worked all the way up through leadership, grew the business, became the CEO in 2015 when I had my third baby. It was like around the same time I was still on maternity leave when they gave me that position. And then in 2017, when I was pregnant with my fourth, my youngest, I sort of advocated to the business owners that I wanted to buy them out and take over the business. And so it's been 3 years since that acquisition. And for me, I really felt that calling because I had been running the business for quite a while at that point. And was in the day-to-day and really felt like in order for me to do what I wanted to do and take care of the team in the way that I wanted to take care of them, I needed to be like the ultimate decision maker. And I wanted to do it at a place that I had grown from the ground up.
Now, if I heard you correctly, and I keep telling people at 44, my hearing is not what it used to be, But you said after your third child and then after your fourth child. So each time you're taking on new roles as you have new babies, many people would find that as a time to kind of sit down, to take on less, to rest. Say, I'm about to have a baby. I'm about to grow my family. Let me focus more on that area and not building a company. But instead, this is the perfect time for you to become a CEO.
That was sort of asked of me in 2015. So I got a phone call when my baby at that time was like 2 weeks old. It was sort of like, listen, when you come back in a few weeks, so I only took like a month off. I was working remote and I felt like I was able to do that or had the privilege to do that. I was sort of like, I'm not really sure that I'm in the headspace for it, but if this is what the business needs of me right now and I'm the right person, then I'm ready to take on that challenge. So there were, at that time, I was still doing like middle of the night feedings and I had my laptop next to me feeding the baby and, typing away notes and emails of like all the things that I was worried, what keeps you up at night, the baby and the business. So, that's how it started. So when I was pregnant with my fourth, I'm sure they weren't anticipating that I would bring that up. That doesn't seem like something that's on your mind when you're, 8 months pregnant. But, at the start of that new year in 2017, she was, my youngest was probably a month old, and we completed that acquisition, and now my baby is the same age as my fifth baby, which is the business. So it's funny.
No, I just think it's very encouraging because, again, so often we step back instead of stepping forward. So I love it. But your focus is on affiliate marketing. And we talk about marketing all day, every day on the show. Every guest has different aspects of marketing and advertising. We don't typically touch on affiliate marketing, which is a revenue source that many businesses forget. They forget about it completely. And one of the things that I always try to keep in mind for business owners is that your website or typically your brand is just like real estate offline. It's location, location, location. And when you have real estate offline, you want to make sure that every square foot earns some type of revenue, that it has some type of return on the investment that you put into it. Websites, the same thing. And affiliate marketing is something that you can utilize to increase your revenue in different places, like your blog or in post, or on, you can have affiliate links on the homepage that makes you money in addition to your products and services. Now, for people who are unfamiliar with affiliate marketing, would you please give us some background?
Sure. Affiliate is one of the earliest forms of online marketing. So like the Amazon affiliate, Amazon Associates program was really like the first affiliate marketing model in the, mid-late 90s. Having all of these thousands of partners that are doing work for you, that are not employed by you but are in partnership with you, that they receive a commission when you as the brand, set up a structure in the Amazon example of selling books. If you send me a visitor who is going to purchase this book you promote, I'll give you 10 cents out of the book's $1. I'll give you a 10% commission. And lots of different, mom and pop type businesses have sprung up and been very successful. And some have even gone public. RetailMeNot is a publicly traded company, and they are one of the first major affiliates in the space that were earning money that way. And, not only do major corporations like, Capital One and Macy's and Bloomingdale's and, in every kind of vertical you can think of, do they have an affiliate, like a formal affiliate program, but, we actually work with a lot of young, innovative startups where this sort of a channel, which is performance driven, I pay out when something is done for me, and that's very attractive. Is a real demand gen channel for young businesses that are looking for a serious growth in their top line without taking a huge chunk of, the money that they do have. And it becomes, when they're successful at it and they do it right, like a big chunk of their earnings in their first couple of years. So that's really exciting to be a part of too.
Why did you focus in on affiliate marketing as opposed to any other aspect of marketing?
I personally, interestingly, like I started an internship. I was a business and English major in college at SUNY Binghamton. Anyone went there?
Okay.
Probably not in this group, But I thought I'd go into publishing, and I applied in my sophomore year of college to Scholastic, the book publishing company, for their summer internship program. And because I had done a little bit of web work, and this was like at the very dawn of affiliate marketing, they, instead of putting me in the publishing department, they said work in the software group, and they asked an intern, a summer intern, to start their affiliate program at Scholastic, which was me. And that was my first foray into affiliate. I think the first year or two that this industry existed. And so when I graduated college, I went back to Scholastic, did it full time. And it really grew from there. That's how I started my career in affiliate. And the rest for me, like this is really where I've built my career.
Interesting. Now, Stephanie, I am going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And our next guest is Beth Miller. And Beth Miller is the CEO of Executive Velocity. She's a certified management coach. And she's also going to talk to us about her book, Are You Talented? Are You Talent Obsessed? Good morning, Beth. How are you?
Good, how are you?
I am excited to be here, excited to get all in your business to find out what's going on with you.
Yeah, so I'm out on the East Coast. I think most of you are on the West Coast. And a lot of my work is with entrepreneurs and small business owners, primarily companies between 30 employees and upwards of 300 employees. And my work is with those owners and those rising leaders, those wonderful millennials that have lots of energy and have high potential for leadership. But many of the smaller companies don't have the resources to really focus on developing them. So that's often when I'm called in to help those leaders kind of get to that next level.
I can imagine one of the coaches to me have been so vital, especially over the last few months since this global pandemic, because what I've seen is a divide in leadership, which means that you have leaders who put on one face for the employees, just like a parent. The parent's like, oh, yes, everything's gonna be okay. We're gonna be all right. Don't worry. And then the parent goes to the other parent. It's like, what do we do? I have no idea. So I've seen that in leadership where leaders are talking to their employees. They're having this, everything are going is going to be okay. You don't have to worry conversations. And then they're calling coaches and saying, you know what? I've never experienced this before. I've never gone through this before. What am I supposed to be doing at this time? Have you seen that as well?
Oh, I've seen a lot of that. And what I encourage them to do is really be transparent about it. That, people know that everything isn't okay. Unless you're on some really niche markets like telehealth, your business has been impacted by this pandemic. So there are a couple things that I do. One is I work with the leader to make sure that they're taking care of themselves, that they've got the energy to give to others. So many of them are focused on trying to, to help their employees, which is great, but they're neglecting themselves. So that's number one. And then number two is when they're spending time with their employees, one of the switches I've seen over the last 5 months is that a lot of leaders pre-COVID focused on results first. That, what are we doing? Where do we need to go? And now, because they're trying to lead from afar through Zoom and other video conferencing platforms, that they spend time upfront connecting with the employee first, making sure that the employee is good, is supported, because there's so many different dynamics that are taking place. You've got the working moms with four kids at home trying to school them, right? And then you've got the single folks that are stuck in their apartments and don't have that social aspect. I was talking to a dear friend in New York City yesterday. He's basically been stuck in his apartment for most of this time. So there's all sorts of dynamics that the leader needs to understand about the employee. So always recommend that you understand where that employee is and then ask for feedback. What can I be doing differently to help you? And then do something with that information. Clearly, if you're not ready to do something with that information, don't ask.
Yes. So with the CEOs, with the executives, with the leaders, once they get, you know, the energy to do for themselves, and then they go speak to their employees. There's also the transition now where most companies have pivoted in some form or fashion. There was this pause where we think about, okay, where are we at now? Not where we were, and we have no idea where we're going, but where are we right now? And then there's the pivot of where they say, okay, maybe my company was only a brick and mortar and I didn't focus on the e-commerce aspect. Now I have to move into a different lane. What are some of the steps that CEOs or executives or leaders can take when they go through that pivoting process?
Well, first of all, don't think that it's all on you. Mm-hmm. If you've built a good team, then engage that team in that brainstorming activity, mm-hmm. and figure out where you need to pivot to. Mm-hmm. Too many small business owners feel like it's all on them, mm-hmm. and that creates a lot of stress. And the reason that you've gone and hired a great team is that teams get things done more faster and quicker than individuals. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing is to don't take it all on yourself and engage the team. And then, you know, there's all sorts of techniques on how to brainstorm that will allow individuals to bring information and ideas to the table, but you've got to be a good listener. Mm-hmm. You know, you be careful. I know some leaders that I work with where they aren't good listeners and they have a preconceived notion in their head as to what the solution is, mm-hmm. and they will dismiss ideas. Well, if you're dismissing ideas, you're going to shut down that individual for future ideas. So, you know, parking lot stuff. Mm-hmm. It might be something that might not be relevant for the conversation today, but it's something that you need to let the person know you heard it and you parking lot it. So, mm-hmm. hey, good idea. Let's put it up on the whiteboard. That way the person knows that they've been heard.
Yes, I like that. I like the parking lot idea. I want to take a comment from our viewers. Amy Trout Hughes says, it's interesting as a leader to be able to admit I don't have all the answers and not have employees be terrified. It's made for a more collaborative environment in many ways. So definitely Amy is agreeing with you. I want to come back and talk about your book, Beth, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Annie Appleby. And Annie is the founder and CEO of Yoga Force. And she did not just create a yoga company. We're also going to talk about yoga mats. Good morning, Annie. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
I'm excited to be here. When I saw Yoga Force, two things came to my mind. Number one, I had a conversation on another show with a lady who does yoga. And I told her, I said, okay, well, talk to me about yoga because I have been unable to decide that I want to do yoga. But everyone around me who knows me is like, Sharifa, you need to calm down. You need to do some yoga. I'm like, no, I don't want to do yoga, but everybody recommends it. So why are you so passionate about yoga, Annie?
Oh, I hated yoga. I worked at Paramount Pictures.
Okay, love it.
And I was a marathon runner in like the 1987. And one of my best friends who worked at Paramount with me said, Annie, you are out of control. Let's go try a yoga class. I'm like, I don't want to do a yoga class. So I had a great yoga teacher. She was really type A. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know what? If you don't like it after 3 weeks, then forget it. Don't do it again. But mm-hmm. it takes 3 weeks. It's like a good book. Sometimes mm-hmm. it doesn't really start off here. It's slow and boring and you want to, then something happens on the next page and you want to finish it that night, right?
Right, right.
So it turned out I'm a type A and I love yoga.
Mm.
That I quit my job at Paramount. I called my uncle. I said, trademark Yoga Force, but don't tell my dad. and then when I was fully vested 5 years, I quit and, mm-hmm. and used my 401k money to start my company, Yoga Force. Mm-hmm. And that was in 1995. So,
okay. I'm like, okay, I just want to go back. So we were at Paramount Pictures, yes. Right? The Paramount Pictures.
Mm-hmm. The one with Tom Cruise at the commissary. Yeah, that one.
And you quit your day job.
I quit my day job.
To focus on yoga and your
company. Yeah, because I taught yoga to the cast and crew of a TV show called Friends.
Oh,
and everybody on Friends did yoga. So we did yoga, and then you know, I'm on the lot at Paramount and everybody's doing yoga. Mm-hmm. And this is like in the late 80s, you know, not when I did the Friends thing in the 90s, but it's just like I loved it so much. And it mm-hmm. really, you know, we had 9-1-1, we had a lot of bad things happen then where people mm-hmm. really started to need yoga even more. And now we have the pandemic, which is, everybody's doing yoga now. Like yes. The sales of my yoga mat are through the roof at Amazon. Can't keep them in stock at Amazon and Home Shopping Network. Just because people need to do yoga, and even kids who are in high school do Zoom classes for yoga because they're stressed out. Everybody's stressed. I mean, if you're not stressed out, you're not alive right now. I don't know. Got it really.
So, just everybody's stressed out. Let's talk about the mat. What is so different and special about
Well, the weird thing about COVID, now I did not plan this for COVID, but each mat comes individually cellophane wrapped. Mm-hmm. So there's no germs.
Right.
You just, it's for you. This yoga mat's for you. You don't want to use somebody else's yoga mat. All the yoga studios pretty much in California are shut down right now anyway.
Right.
I don't know how it is in New York, but I mean, most yoga studios, because they're indoors, they're shut down. So people are doing yoga outside. I was teaching yoga outside before the fire started in California. So no yoga right now outside, but a lot of yoga inside.
Okay, I want to go back to Friends because we dropping some names today. So how do you convince the people? And maybe it's not convincing. Maybe they were eager. How do you get Friends cast to start doing yoga?
Because I had a clothing line. I started out with Yoga Force clothing line, which if you go to the yogaforce.com and you go to the about page and you go scroll all the way down, you'll see the about section. Mm-hmm. And so I sold my Yoga Force clothing line to Fred Siegel, Bloomingdale's, Nordstrom's, all the big stores.
More and names.
So I had big logos, really mm-hmm. big logos that said Yoga Force. Mm-hmm. I was in a yoga class. And a scout came up to me and he said, I'm working for the Murphy Brown Show. I think it was called the Murphy Brown Show. And he said, we're doing a yoga class on the Murphy Brown Show. We need to have those sweatshirts, except for CBS's policy is the logo, maximum size of a logo can be 4/4 like this, 4/4 around. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, we have those. We did not have those. And I go and I make little logos. And I bring them over to the Murphy Brown Show, and they used them on the Murphy Brown Show. Then I take yoga with Brian Kest, and we have several movie stars that go to the Meg Ryan, Courtney Cox, this mm-hmm. first one. And they go, hey, where did you get that sweatshirt? I love that Yoga Force sweatshirt. So it started that way. Then mm-hmm. the scouter asked me for the show, and they paid for it, this full retail for the sweatshirt. So I'm like, wow. And then there was a Dharma and Greg show. Do you guys remember that show?
Yes.
Where she was a yoga teacher. I'm like, I got to talk myself in on that. So I went in on all these shows. I sold my Yoga Force clothes with this logo to all these TV shows. And that helped a ton.
Oh, I can imagine.
For my product, and it was free product placement.
Yeah.
So there, that's how that was born.
But you make it seem so easy. I mean, that's the thing.
It kind of was. It just worked. I mean, it was like, my dad was so mad at me. I cannot tell you how mad my father was at me for quitting my job and starting Yoga Force. But it's like, I go, Daddy, everybody in the world should do yoga. It's really good.
I know I need
to. I was right. It wasn't a fad. I mean, I did have a lot of guys tell me it was a fad. Nobody's ever going to do yoga.
But I mean, I'm telling you, what you have done is what everyone pretty much typically dreams of being having a product and then having their product on a celebrity, you know, and celebrity. I'm in Long Beach, California, you know, a couple of miles from Hollywood. People always say, you know, I have the next best thing. If I can get this celebrity to wear it, if Courtney Cox will wear it, then I know my product, my sales will go through the roof. That's when celebrities are like, don't come near me because I already know.
Well, it's different. I mean, in the 90s, it was not like you have to pay them an exorbitant price. I mean, now it's much different. I mean, back then it was like much easier. I got to say that. So a lot of celebrities have my mat, but, you know, they use it personally. I don't know if they, you just never know because you have to have in style magazine person click them when they're going into a yoga class or something, and nobody's going really into yoga classes right now,
so we don't have to figure that out and answer that question. I want to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, who has been so patient and waiting for all the ladies to speak. And I always tell people about this show, I don't know what it is, but I can always get the women to come out. The men are like, no, I don't want to talk. I don't want to share. I don't want to communicate. But I love it when the gentlemen join us on the show. We have Mr. Lauren Howard today, and he is the founder and president of Prime Plus Mortgages, as well as Arizona Hard Money Loans. Good morning, Lauren. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Appreciate you having me.
I appreciate you being here. How are you enjoying the conversation thus far?
It's been good. I'm learning a lot of different businesses, a lot of diversity. So it's interesting.
You are a serial entrepreneur, correct?
I am, yeah. Yep.
When did you start your first business?
I started my first business out of college when I was about 22. I called my MBA, though, obviously, because it failed. but I learned a lot from the process. And it was actually a sexual enhancement product that my buddy had his uncle had a manufacturing company. And so we decided one day, hey, we'll go try to build this product, and we didn't really know anything about it. I was a football player in college, and All-American. I was supposed to go to the NFL and got hurt. So instead of getting a job and a sales job and learning about business, we just decided that we'd start a business, which I guess is the best way to learn about it. I didn't have any business background. You know, I was raised single parent mom who was like a secretary and substitute teacher. So, you know, it was a lot of learning in athletics. I could train hard. I could eat better. I could watch more film. I could get direct results. Business was a much more difficult thing for me to learn because there were so many more dynamics. And I didn't have a history in it. So that was kind of my first run at it. That failed. But in the process from there, I started a website development and an SEO company with a guy that I met out in India who built my website for the first company and started getting the snowball rolling down the hill from there in a positive direction. So
I think that's wonderful. I want to go back to this first product, the sexual enhancement product. Yeah. That to me seems like a very difficult product to sell.
Yeah, yeah. So it was kind of back in the Enzyte male enhancement product days, and my friend had worked at one of those call centers, and he's like, man, these guys are making money hand over fist. Let's go try to copy them. And so, you know, we're two young kids. Sure, let's figure it out, you know. And his uncle owned a supplement manufacturing company, so we kind of had that portion. But the problem is we spent so much time on the formulation and the design and the set. We didn't know how to figure out how to set up an LLC, just all of that stuff. And we figured, you know, once we launched the website, all of a sudden traffic was going to come and people were going to buy it, you know. So we're waiting for the launch. And, you know, you launch and it's like crickets, you know. Because we didn't know anything about online marketing. We didn't know anything about SEO, affiliate marketing. We were trying to run the free trial model as well. So obviously the sales that we did have that were free trials all charged back anyway.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So, you know, but it was, and I'd borrow like $5,000 from three different uncles. He borrowed $5,000. So we had like a 30 grand. And, you know, I ended up paying my uncles back like, I don't know, 8 years later when I made some money, but maybe 5 years. But it was a really, I learned so much through that experience and just about business 101 that you kind of, I always say, yeah, your road to your first $1 million has nothing to do with the money itself, but it has to do with the skill set and the relationships and the resources that you develop in the process, because that is now you and you take that with you into your next business. And I've done a ton of different things since then, and I've had more success than failures. Obviously, failures come along with the part, but learning those first valuable lessons was extremely important for my growth.
Now, one of the things that I spoke about with Stephanie earlier is that kind of that calling, that this is something that I have to do. That, you know, when I find entrepreneurs, you have a set of entrepreneurs that's kind of on a line. It's like, oh yeah, I'm doing this, you know, because I'm unemployed. Where you have those entrepreneurs, and it's the ones around me are those entrepreneurs that are like, I don't care what happens, I am not going to get a job. Like, that is not even in their peripheral. That is not something I do. And to me, you seem like the latter, where you're like, it wouldn't even cross your mind to stop or not be an entrepreneur or self-employed.
Yeah, well, there was some, you know, going through that process while I was trying to grind and figure out how to make money and make it, like, there were some times where you're like, oh, do I go get a job? And you catch a break, you know, you catch a little money here to pay your rent, you catch a little money here, you close a sale, but you're just scrapping. But while you're scrapping, you're learning and you're growing. And then you finally hit one deal. Okay, now I'm making $4,000 or $5,000 a month. I can survive. But it's tough. And then once you develop that, you get that taste that it's already in your blood anyway, and you kind of feed it, then you're never going back. At least me. And then you grow more, and it's a very exciting thing. And the thought, I mean, I couldn't work for anybody unless there was in a situation where it was part time, where it was temporary, and then I could learn a lot from them. If it was someone who was so far above me that I would, I'd go carry their bags to learn from them. But the objective would be to learn, not to earn, right?
Mm-hmm. But that's very humble. That's very humble that you still want to continue to learn. I think that's because sometimes we get to a certain point where we feel like I've learned enough. I don't need to go out and learn anything else or learn any more. So one of the things that you learned was the website and the SEO. And I'm sure you've incorporated that into your current businesses. But one of the things that I've learned about sales is that salespeople are very driven. And they may start off with one product or service, but inevitably they wind up at real estate. That's one of the things that I've seen, because they like, okay, I want more. I want more. I want more. What's more? What can I sell that's not, I don't want to make $15 off of a sale. So eventually they wound up in real estate.
So for me, my first successful company was a league aggregate. So we actually brokered, we generated leads through call centers all over the world. So we were a lead aggregate. We would do call verify leads or live transfers for the Dybex supply space, online colleges. So that's where I kind of sort of made my first $1 million. I was about 26 and really got going. From there, I got into the compounding pharmacy space. So I built a compounding pharmacy we did like seven figures in 15 months, really had a strong run of that. And then from there, I started doing hard money lending on the side with the money we're making from that. I like the hard money lending space because you're being the bank for, I think it's a very safe space. And then I also accumulating rental properties. I have probably 20 rentals and some short-term and long-term rentals as well. So, I just, for me, I've been able to apply my passion and focus to multiple industries and be able to have success and just kind of evolve that way. I like the lending business now. I came from the pharmacy space where I had 170 employees. We were in 40 states and a lot of regulation and a lot of headaches. Now, all my employees are virtual and it's less of a management for me, more of a lifestyle business. I'm a day trader as well. So real estate is good. When you do real estate, you have a cash flow play, but more so it's an appreciation play. You're building wealth and equity. And on the hard money lending side, it's a cash flow play. So I have both of those kind of going side by side. So you're building wealth on one side. And I have some venture investments as well, which is also a wealth play. You build wealth through equity appreciation, and then you have your cash flow, of course, to invest into those situations or to live your lifestyle. So that's kind of how I set it up to this point.
No, I like that. One of the things I see in successful people is that they are never satisfied. There's always the next move. There's always the next deal. There's always the next venture, no matter what you think. Like, okay, haven't you earned enough? Haven't you? And it's not about the money. It's just like they have to do something else, something next. And so that I kind of see that in you. It's like there's this energy of having a flow, kind of do something else. I can see you as a retired person. Like, you probably would be bored, just try to retire and watch TV.
Well, for me, when I get things like super, because I'm a very systems oriented and vision person, and when I get them too dialed in, I get a little complacent, and then, you know, happy hour come a little early, you know. And so I always got to kind of throw myself into, like we started a charity 4 years ago, 501c3 in the Valley. We raised over like $1.3 million. And we have a $0 operating budget as well. I'm the president of that. So that's kind of, for me, my operating company, so to speak, where I can really throw my energy into that. But I think it's important for me to have just different, I'm a golf fanatic now too. So I just have different buckets that I can fill my energy into so that I can stay productive, feel like I'm continuing to grow and to learn. And I think that for me, at least, that's a very important thing for my life, to have balance, and also to have, you know, the joy and the satisfaction that I need in order to continue to thrive and be happy, you know?
I love it. I want to go over to Beth for a moment. I didn't have an opportunity to discuss your book. Do you have your book with you?
I do. Yes. Yeah. So this Are You Talent Obsessed? And it was written back in 14. The whole point was to get people to leaders to really understand how important talent is to your success, and to be focused on identifying talent and developing that talent. So it's a quick read. I'm actually in the process of writing another book on succession planning for small businesses, and it delves more into the actual development of key employees, so that you've got what I call, you become replaceable. So if you've got a really good leadership pipeline, you can make yourself replaceable so that you can go on and do other things like Lauren does, because you've got somebody there who you know you can count on to run the operation. So
I think that's excellent. And I think that's one thing that small business owners do not necessarily keep in mind. It, you know, so often we spend time putting out fires. And I always say, all you do all day, put out fires, your business isn't operating correctly. You should put out an occasional fire as opposed to a fire every day. Your business should be able to operate with or without you. And too often we don't put that in mind. I want to go to Stephanie. Stephanie, I'm pretty sure this is one of the things that you took into account, especially being pregnant during these, you know, transitions. You have to be able to take a look and say, okay, I may not be available, or how do we operate, you know, if I'm not there?
Well, I think that I was in a pretty privileged position, which a lot of us are in now, which is that I always worked remote. And so the rest of the team was also virtual. And I think that allowed me to take really, really short maternity leave, which I don't necessarily recommend, but the most I ever was really like absent was like 4 weeks. But it does take quite a while for your brain to fully like sharpen in that way again. So I'm sure there were plenty of like business meetings where other people on the leadership team felt the need to bail me out of, you know, incomplete or incoherent thoughts that I'm not aware of. So, you know, but I was certainly the recipient of that. I got that phone call when I was, you know, a few weeks postpartum from the former CEO of this business saying, I want to go off and do something else. I need you to take over the business. And, I think what Beth is describing is like really important in training people, because there's a big difference. There's like, for me, there were like two big differences. One was going from like supporting a leader to being the leader, and then another from running a business to owning the business, which is like another learning curve. So I think that the succession planning is really important.
So I'm curious, Stephanie, did you feel prepared when you got that call?
No. and it was difficult, not just because of where I was personally in my life, but also the owner, part of why he wanted me to tap in to do that was because, you know, he was getting married and he was going to be taking like an extended leave and other things. And that was very difficult because I previous to that was a COO. And so I was very inward facing and a lot of like process, people, team building. He was more of externally facing sales, clients, evangelism. And now suddenly it's like, how do I do that without someone else here? I know one side of the business, but I'm like completely new to the other. And then purchasing the business and becoming the owner, you think, well, I've run this business for a few years, so I don't even need to do my due diligence. I know how I've been running it. But like, I definitely feel like there was probably more I could have understood, but maybe wouldn't have when it became like fully my ownership responsibility in every way too, was like a big learning curve.
Okay. So Stephanie, I have to ask, you're running companies, you have 4 kids. How do you not pull all your hair out? Like, are you in yoga every week, meditation? What do you do?
This has been, I was saying to my husband last night, like, I don't think I'll ever, my husband is a physician. He has his own challenging schedule. We do have help at home. Thank God. I certainly during the quarantine, I didn't have anyone coming in to help. I don't have anyone that's living here. And so for like 3 to 4 months until mid-June, I was really trying to homeschool and deal with all the fires that were going on in the business for all the quarantine reasons you might imagine. I was just saying to my husband last night, I don't think I'll ever be able to like fully articulate for you the challenge, like personally and professionally, that the last 6 months have been. But I did start, and actually I would recommend this for anyone, you know, I would make a lot of excuses like, I don't have any time for me, and I get up and I have to deal with the kids and then I work. And I realized, you know, there's a lot of ways pre-COVID that I would go and get my gym time and stuff. And you kind of lose that schedule. And like in April, I said to my kids, like, I think I need, when I get up in the morning, like 30 to 40 minutes to myself. And please pretend that I'm sleeping. I'm going to go on a machine and then I don't want anyone talking to me. And there were some like punishments when they would violate that. But like, they've been really good about giving me that time so that before I talk to anyone, even though it's like 6 a.m, I've got it.
Mm-hmm.
That's been really good.
No, that's important. You have to have that me time. And even though there were some punishments, I'm glad your kids allowed you that flexibility to be able to do that, because it's so important for us, for our mental, you know, our bodies, our health, for our mental health, to be able to just relax and you know, come into the day. Lauren, you mentioned being a football player, and I can just look at you. I'm pretty sure you have some level of activity during your day. Like, you've been to the gym. Don't try to fool me. I can see you, like, you know, either in your house or something.
I built a 2,000 square foot gym. That's on my property, so that's actually the entrance to the gym back there. So I try to stay in shape. You know, I've always been a competitive athlete. I mean, you know, one of the, like 2 years ago, I decided I want to try to set some world records on the indoor rowing machine. It's just one of those, another mountains to climb for me. And so I hired a guy, one of my good buddies, to come and train me. And we, you know, pinned our ears back, and I end up setting the 500 meter world record on the indoor rowing machine, the 100 meter, and then the max distance for 1 minute. And, you know, it's just always been a part of my life. I built the gym on my property because I'm so passionate about working out and training. My wife is as well. And so it's just a part of our routine. It has always has been. I think that the training and that aspect kind of feeds all other aspects of my life. And so it's just been something that's been an integral part of my life since, you know, I was 13 or 14 years old. So it's kind of never really stopped. And I got some injuries and stuff, because I've had 8 surgeries from football. So I'm actually going down to Cabo in September to get stem cells. I'm trying to regrow some cartilage and things so I can try to do some of the stuff that I did when I was younger, just because I'm limited a little bit on the things I can do. But as far as training, I mean, it's just been an integral part of my life, and it always will be. It kind of is the center point, I guess, if that makes sense.
No, it definitely makes sense, but it just seems like it helps with your mindset. I was speaking to another guest on another panel, and she was saying that she runs, and we were discussing like the mood, and she's like, oh, absolutely. She said, people around me will tell me, you might need to have a run. Like whenever I get cranky, or they're like, maybe you need to go for a run. So what I see with entrepreneurs and successful people, they have a lot of energy. And so they have to find some outlet or some way to get that energy out, or they might, you know, get a little cranky. I don't know. Annie, with yoga, I know you do yoga all the time, so, you know, you're relaxed, but I'm sure that helps.
I'm not relaxed.
You're not?
I'm a power person. I'm never relaxed. I'm like, I'm so type A still. I do yoga, but it's hard yoga. It's not like, woo, sit around and humming yoga.
What is hard yoga?
It's hard. I mean, it's power yoga. So if you go to yogaforce.com, you'll see that I have lines on the mat for body alignment. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times when you're doing fast moves on your yoga mat, you get out of alignment and that could cause injuries. Mm-hmm. And I actually developed the mat because I got in a car accident and I was completely out of alignment and I didn't know it. So
oh, wow. I'm sorry.
The yoga mat helps for perfect body alignment when you're doing yoga or Pilates. It's a good floor exercise mat. But yeah, I mean, I'm very type A. You can't really be an entrepreneur if you're not a type A personality.
Exactly. I know I am. I know I am. But yeah. Okay, so you're type A, you're doing your power moves, but overall, do you feel that doing the yoga helps with your mental health, your mental wellness?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the breathing, you incorporate deep breathing with movement. And even if you like meditation, breathing and meditation, I'm not very good at meditation, but you know, even after you do a couple poses for 20 minutes, your whole day could be much better. Mm-hmm. You know, it's great. It's great. It's just like it's plugging in your computer when your computer needs a little plug in. You know what I mean?
Yes. But I've never in my life heard anyone say out loud on a recorded show that they're not very good at meditation.
I'm not very good at it. I should work on that. But I'm a type A, so it's my personality.
Okay, what's wrong? Like, what's happening? Like, your mind won't sit still. Your body.
My mind does not sit still. No, it doesn't. Okay. My VC, my primary investor, he is a master meditation guy, a mm-hmm. master. Mm-hmm. And so maybe when I get a little older, I will just get really into meditation. But right now, I'm just too busy. I like yoga and moving and running.
Can't start my day without meditation. I don't know why. I don't know if I'm the only one, but I have to get up in the morning and meditate. And what I find is through meditation, because I used to think my mind was busy, but what I found was that I'm basically figuring out everything that I need to do. And then 15 minutes later, I get up and then I just do it. And it's not like I have to go, okay, now what do you do? It just kind of comes to me because I've actually sat and thought it. And I think I don't do yoga, much exercise. I need to do exercise, I know. But it helps me start the day off in a calm manner. Does anyone do meditation? Am I alone?
I do. I'm not consistent on it. But when you do it regularly, you can get good at it.
Yes.
Yeah. I did it for short bursts of time and I need to get back on a regular basis because it helps. I mean, it brought my blood pressure down.
Yes. Yes. That helps as well. Lauren?
Funny little story. Actually, both my parents were transcendental meditation teachers. And
That's impressive. That means they were like way ahead of their time.
Yeah, they were.
Back in the day, they went and followed Maharishi and they went to Europe and stuff. So I was taught to meditate at a very young age. I didn't start regularly meditating up probably until I was about 25, but it's part of my morning routine as well, yeah.
Do you find that how does it affect you? Or do you notice a difference when you don't meditate or haven't meditated for days?
Yeah, absolutely. It just calms your mind a little bit. I mean, if you look at it from a scientific or a biology standpoint, it slows down your brain waves and allows your left and right hemispherical brains to communicate better, which allows it to de-junk itself and let the subconscious kind of clear out all of the shit that it's been holding on to for that day that it stores. And so from a scientific perspective, that's essentially what it's doing. You can do it through holosync technology or through other things, but really you're just trying to slow your brain waves down.
I've never heard it explained scientifically like that. It was like some science there, then some just let all the shit go. Like whatever was there, just let it go. I like that, but I don't know. It helps me because I'm definitely type A personality. Stephanie, which way are you leaning?
I had read, I don't know if you guys know this book called Miracle Morning, where they talk about meditation as part of like a morning routine. And I had tried that at some point along with like the other steps. And now I sort of like definitely get the exercise in. How much silence am I getting? You know, like there are like things I pick and choose from that routine to try and do like each morning, but not consistently. I also, I have a similar problem to Annie where if it's not like the right time of day, like if I'm not in the right headspace, I just can't get myself there to like quiet everything that's going on in my head. But I know that it, when I do, it's helpful.
I don't know. I just find it relaxing. I find it one of those things that helps me get through to the day. One of those things that helps other people stay alive. Cause I'm like, I really want to kill. Oh no, I can't. Let me just sit here and breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. Cause you know, sometimes is very difficult. I wanted to go over to back to Lauren because you mentioned the hard money loans. For people who aren't familiar with hard money loans or how you can be assistance, would you explain that a little bit more in detail?
Yeah, for sure. So what a hard money loan is essentially we lend based on the value of the asset. So it's a business purpose loan for investors. So say that you're buying a house at an auction or buying a distressed property with a plan on fixing it. Usually they buy them from wholesalers, which get them under contract for motivated sellers. And they have to close on that deal in 2 days, in a week. So we don't run credit. We don't do background checks. It's all asset based. So all we do to underwrite the we need pictures of the property, the address, the purchase contract. We'll tell you how much we'll lend on it, what the rate will be. Now we're more expensive, obviously. We're six month term usually in high interest rates, but because we can close in 2 days and no questions asked, it makes it a little easier. So we pretty much service Arizona only, but it's for any investor that's looking to purchase a property that needs to close quickly on that property. And we lend on distressed assets. I mean, you know, pretty much really anything in the residential space. And so it's just an easy way to provide a.
Looks like we're having an interesting show today.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we have. Today has been one of those days. I had another question for Lauren. I'm trying to get Lauren back so I can get this last question in. But let me change directions for a minute. I want to go to Annie. Annie, it seems like, are you with me, Annie?
Yes, I'm with you.
Okay, I wasn't sure anymore. We had a couple of technical challenges there. But I want to go back to this process, using your natural abilities, because you're a talker. That's what it comes down to. You're a talker. People like your personality. They like just being around you. They like your energy. What are in business? What are some of the things that you would have done different given, or what are some of the things that you learned about being in business?
I did the whole thing by myself based on a whim. So what I learned was I'm not afraid to ask anybody anything.
I think that's deep. I think that's very deep.
So you just got to be brave. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't work out, go on to the next person. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was trying to get my clothes into Bloomingdale's. Mm-hmm. I thought, I can't get my clothes into Bloomingdale's until I get into Fred Segal. Because in the 90s, Fred Segal was the it place in West Hollywood and Santa Monica. So I kept on calling the buyer. Of course, the buyer was never there. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I can't get anywhere unless I get my clothes there. I got my clothes there. Then I got into Nordstrom's and I got into Bloomingdale's. I mean, that was like it was very fast. The whole thing was very fast. And also when I developed and patented my Yoga Force mat, I sent an email to Time Magazine and I got it into Time Magazine. So I had an interview with Sharper Image and Sharper Image bought 17,000 Yoga Force mats, the first order.
Okay, look, Annie, let me tell you, I just hired you, right? We're gonna work on the whole salary thing. We'll get to that later. But right now, you now work as whatever title you want. We're going to get you as Sharifa, okay? We're going to need you to be a part of the team, get it out there, get on the phone, because people don't tell you no. I love that. I'm like, Annie's in charge of sales and marketing now. She's our new whatever, because I love your energy. You even said the buyer doesn't answer the phone. I mean, what did you do? Go down to his office and show
no,
up?
No, it was Sharon Siegel. Mm-hmm. And I kept calling and calling and leaving messages and leaving messages. And then one, I just kept calling. I was very persistent. That's another thing, I'm persistent. But one day she answered the phone. And I'm like, hi, this is Annie Appleby. She goes, okay, come in here. I'm gonna pick out a sweatshirt. I'm gonna wear it on a plane. If anybody comments it on the plane, I will order it. So she went to Sedona, Arizona for a spa weekend and everybody wanted it. So basically I got a big order that started that. And then wow, that was too much. I mean, it's one person handling this whole business. And I am in the process of selling Yoga Force.
Oh, wow.
So, wow. To a big company. So wow.
Congratulations.
Hopefully that works. I mean, it's just that COVID is a little bit hard right now with that yes. stuff. But being consistent is the key to success.
Completely. I agree. After everything I've been through over the last 20 something years, we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. I need a couple of extra minutes because there was one question that I wanted to ask Lauren, and we have Lauren back. I always ask our real estate people this quick question. What do you see as far as the trends? Because I speak to some people and they say, do not absolutely buy anything right now. I met a guy, a guest in Vegas, and he was like, this is the perfect time to buy. Everything's pennies on the dollar. Then you have people say, well, buy residential, not commercial. What are your thoughts quickly, Lauren?
A little bit of a loaded question. I think that with residential, because we have very, very low inventory and super low rates, that we still have some tailwind. I think commercial has a lot of pent-up foreclosures. Residential as well as forbearances. So you don't know how much once they allow evictions and foreclosures to happen will flood the market with inventory. I imagine that inventory will be gobbled up by the lack of supply right now anyway.
We're having fun today. So there are about 3 minutes left in the show. So what I'm going to do is allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who's watching in the archives, and simply let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And do we have Beth with us?
Yes. Yeah, I am still here.
Beth.
Yeah, so I would like your listeners to take away the fact that if there are leaders, they should be developing the people behind them in a way that will help them prepare for the future and allow them to move on to that next position, whether it be a higher leadership position or retirement or starting a new business. It's having the leaders there at the right time.
I think that's excellent. Annie, what do you have for us?
Well, I just think everybody should do yoga, especially now. I mean, it really does help, and it allows you to take time for yourself. It's a very solo thing. So it's like 45 minutes, like a day. If you take 45 minutes a day and you just get some peace and quiet and you move, I think it's just like you have to.
Yes, I agree. Stephanie, so you can get you a mat and then you could tell the kids, I'm doing my yoga, not to be disturbed.
Mommy time.
what I want them to take away. I think take chances. Don't let life create excuses for you. If you want it, you know, bet on yourself. I think the rest will come.
I think that's it. Bet on yourself. Nice. Great advice. Lauren, what do you have for us?
I think I would say that sometimes the qualities and the skill sets and the mentality that gets you to where you want to go are not always conducive to allow you to enjoy it when you get there. So just be cognizant of the mentality that takes you to get there and versus once you get there to be able to enjoy the fruits of your labor and recognize that the difference between the two, I guess, would be my advice.
I think it's excellent advice. I want to thank you all for joining me on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I don't know about you, but I learned a lot. I had a blast. This was an amazing show. And I especially have to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you didn't watch the live show doesn't mean you aren't as important. We appreciate you, whether you're watching it today, 2 months from now, 2 years from now. The information, the people is still relevant. But don't just watch the show. Don't just share the show. Please support our guests. Their websites, their information is in the Facebook post. Please check them out. Please follow them on social media. And when you send them that first message, that first tweet, that first inbox, that first message, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow at the same time, 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now. Bye. Yeah.